Welcome to the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I'm Liam S. Smith, and the greatest trick I ever pulled was convincing the world I didn't exist.
I'm Regan Lloyd, and I'm a Pip Enigma.
Okay, what does that mean?
Pippin is a musical that has a song called We've Got Magic to Do, so I assume the whole thing is about magic, but because I don't know, it's an enigma. Pippinigma.
Okay, sure. That's what they call The Prestige.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
No.
Neither. It's not important.
Can we watch it for a thing?
I doubt it.
Well, fuck.
We'll do 50 episodes of this and then we'll start a podcast about magicians.
Perfect.
Okay, how are you, Regan?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Good. I hear you had some results in a competition since
I
we last
am
spoke.
The second best new burlesque performer in the UK.
Very nice.
Which is pretty sick.
High praise.
I came second in Burlesque Idol, which is very good, I think, personally. And also the winner was from Norway, so I'm secretly crowning myself the best UK person.
Fair enough.
The top three were from Norway, Australia and Germany,
UK.
So...
Oh, okay.
Sorry, UK.
Soz.
Well, but that was good.
On my end, I found some grey hairs in my head today.
Oh, no!
They're sort of on the right side of my head, just above my ear. I've got a bit of salt and pepper action going on there.
Oh, very distinguished.
I think it's very, very flattering, as long as it doesn't spread too much.
I'm very happy for you.
Yeah.
Didn't get any Friday 40 tickets for Harry Potter, by the way. Just an update. Fuck 'em.
To hell with it. Who cares about Harry Potter and the Cursed Child? There's a movie out that I haven't seen.
Yeah, me neither.
I was very excited to see it because it seemed very whimsical, and then someone at rehearsal told me, oh, it's so dark, and then I just lost a lot of interest.
It's Why a would movie you make about a Hufflepuff.
A movie called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them really dark?
Maybe they're all in sewers.
Yeah, or dark rooms, or... cinemas.
Oh, fucking, that's a good
That'd
one.
Be scary. Like that scene in Gremlins that really scared me as a child where the gremlins burst through the cinema screen.
I don't think I've ever seen Gremlins.
You gotta. It's all right.
All right. Put it on the list.
Okay, so what do we watch today?
Jonathan Creek!
That's right.
I only stopped watching it 15 minutes ago. I don't know why it took me so long to realise. Yes, we watched Jonathan Creek, which we've been talking about watching for fucking ages.
Yeah, honestly, this is my favourite mystery show. Probably the first one that I really got into watching.
Me too.
Full disclosure for the Mystery Envelope segment, I do own the DVDs, but I haven't watched them in about 6 years, so I can't really remember anything.
I can vouch for that by the fact that Liam forgot he owned the DVDs when we started watching it today.
Yeah. So, any thoughts about Jonathan Creek?
They're all positive. I also remember it being one of the first mystery shows that I really liked watching. I don't remember anything about it. Like, I remember watching it a lot, but I don't remember any of the mysteries. I feel like there was one about a seagull, but then when I went to search for it on Netflix, the only other Jonathan thing that came up was Jonathan Livingston Seagull, and I was like, maybe Dad just made jokes about Jonathan Livingston Seagull right. while we were watching Jonathan Creek. So
there are maybe half a dozen episodes I remember fragments from, but they are more to do with how things were done, and I don't remember any character faces from any specific episodes. Like, I remember one specific mystery involves like hanging a big tarp outside and cutting someone's hair.
Of course, it
does. In fact, those could be, in fact, two different mysteries. But I seem to think they're interrelated.
And that makes no sense without the context, so...
No, so we should explain the premise of the show, I guess, is that the titular character, Jonathan Creek, is played by Alan Davies, as we'll get to shortly, is a magician's trick designer? What do you call that?
Yeah, I don't know, actually.
Oh, Wikipedia describes him as a creative consultant.
Oh, okay.
But he works for a magician named Adam Klaus and designs his tricks for him. And throughout the now 5 series of this show, he's dragged into solving mysteries by a variety of very driven professional women.
Hooray!
Yeah.
Hooray for driven professional women.
Yes. So I guess we may as well just dive into persons of interest.
Absolutely, let's do it.
Unless you have anything you want to say about... just my general description.
No, you fucking nailed it.
Okay. Joining Jonathan for this series and the first three is Carolyn Quinton as Maddie Magellan. She's an investigative journalist. She is sort of his window into the mystery-solving world because, at least in this episode, she is contacted by a man who is wrongfully accused of murder to solve it, I guess.
Well, she's writing a book on botched police investigations.
Yes, that's right. And she has previously written a book about mysteries of some sort, but it's not selling very well.
10,000 returns in Australia.
That's not good.
Not at all.
They put them on boomerangs, she said.
Classic.
Carolyn is played... Maddie is played by Carolyn Quinton, who is an actress with a long storied career of which I've seen very little.
Perfect.
Most recently, she played Mrs. Bumble in 15 episodes of a show called Dickensian, which is like a sort of intertextual universe combining the works of Charles Dickens, apparently. So I guess you'd have like Great Expectations and Oliver Twist.
Yeah, because I don't think Mrs. Bumble is a character.
I don't know.
There's Mr. Bumble.
In Oliver?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's the one that sells Oliver.
Okay, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not overly familiar with Oliver.
It's a really good musical.
And also a book.
Yeah, but please, I didn't read the book.
I read like 2/3 of Great Expectations after seeing the play for like 7 nights in a row because I was ushering it.
I'm reading A Christmas Carol for We Read the Book.
Oh, of course, A Christmas Carol. That's a great, great story. One of my favourite Muppet adventures.
That's literally the reason I'm doing that for We Read the Book. Months ago, I was bookmarked for it because it's my favourite movie. So look out for that in your podcast feeds.
Without getting into it too much, I guess A Christmas Carol is kind of one of those stories that is done in everything.
Yeah, but the Muppet one is the quintessential Christmas Carol.
You've got what's his name as
Gonzo?
Scrooge.
Oh, Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
You've got a song that was so dull that my sister and I used to fast forward through it when we watched the VHS that we had taped when it was on Channel 7.
I'm guessing that involves the Ghost of Christmas Past?
No! It does, actually, but it's not sung by the Ghost of Christmas Past. It's...
No, I remember that bit being particularly boring.
Yeah, it's his fiance singing a song about how the love is gone. And when I bought the DVD a few years ago, they've just cut it. They've just cut it entirely.
Nice.
I was like, we were so ahead of the curve there.
I was always more into Muppet Treasure Island, personally.
Oh, well, see, we actually bought the video of that. And we didn't just tape it off the TV.
Actually supporting it.
Yeah.
Anyway, this isn't... is there a Muppet mystery property?
Yeah, the Great Muppet Caper.
Oh, is that a mystery?
It's a movie.
I assumed it was a heist.
I think it might be a heist, but I will make an exception so we can watch the Muppets.
Okay. Anyway, Jonathan Creek.
Yeah, fuck, that was a big tangent we went on. Who are other persons of interest? That's where we were at.
Providing, I guess, sort of comic relief and contextual thematic imagery in this episode is Sir Anthony Head as Adam Clowes, the magician that Jonathan works for.
What's he been in?
A lot of things. Notably, Giles in Buffy. I want to say he was the Prime Minister in Little Britain. He was in one episode of season one of Gallivant. He was Gallivant's dad, though when they met Gallivant's dad in season two, it wasn't the same actor.
Interesting, I didn't notice
that. So Anthony plays Adam in this episode of Jonathan Creek, but then, because this was the pilot, I guess between that, this being recorded and picked up, he accepted the role of Giles on Buffy. So from here on out, he's played by Stuart Milligan.
Ah, there you go.
I think Sir Anthony is a very good actor, but I never saw the first episode of this when I first started watching it, so I always found it strange compared to Stuart Milligan's performance of Adam.
Nope, that's fair.
And in terms of our episodic cast, our victim is Hedley Shale, a sort of controversial artist, I guess.
Yeah, for context, it opens on his paintings, which are like nudes, but they've got sad clown makeup painted on them.
That's exactly how I had described them. Colin Baker played Hedley Shale. You may know him as the sixth Doctor Who.
I did not.
Okay, but you, the listener, might.
Yeah.
He wears very colourful coat, and his season was fraught by writing difficulties and has the worst moment in the whole series where, suffering from, like, post-regeneration stress, he starts strangling his sidekick.
Fucking what?
Yeah, it was a really real low point for the entire franchise.
Yeah.
There's a good moment in one of his audio stories, though, where it's the end of one of the episodes and he goes, "Well, you know, I am the very model of a Gallifreyan buccaneer." And everyone's like, "What?" And then he goes, "Oh," and that's the end of the episode.
That is very funny.
So, also in the episode. Yes, exactly.
I was trying to figure out if Gallifreyan buccaneer fit the rhyming scheme, but obviously.
Oh, it does. He performs it in the next episode.
Oh my God, that's very good.
Sheila Gish plays Serena Shale, the victim's wife and editor-in-chief of Eve magazine. She has a lot of credits. The only one that I recognise even tangentially, though, is Rachel Ellenstein in Highlander Endgame.
Well.
And it's only because I was reading about the Highlander franchise on Wikipedia, like, 2 days ago.
So, unemployment's treating you well, then?
No. I have some work next week, though.
Oh, I'm very happy for you.
Fringe Festival.
Already?
Distributing marketing materials, my friend.
Ooh.
Gets me a staff pass, apparently, and no work during the festival period, so...
So you are going to use that staff pass to take your buddy Reggie to some shows.
Hopefully. Saskia Mulder plays Francesca Boutron, model and secret lover of the victim. Since she's from the Netherlands, most of her stuff has been sort of foreign language productions that I'm not familiar with, so I don't have a credit for her.
She's beautiful, though. Good job.
Yes. And finally, Jane Hazelgrove plays the Shale family's housekeeper, Katrina Topless.
Yeah, that was the worst name in the world.
It sounds like sort of sub-Bond girl pun name.
Yeah, like, just, nah.
You know, Katrina Topless, pussy galore.
If only I'd started burlesque after we'd watched this, that could have been my burlesque name.
It's never too late to rebrand if everything goes wrong for you one day.
Exactly.
Jane played Kathleen Dixie Dixon in 401 episodes of Casualty.
That's a long career move.
Yeah.
Is that all our POIs?
That is all of our persons of interest.
Well, should we get into dissecting how this murder went down?
Let's. Sad clown nudes explode into your screen as the episode starts.
Also, one thing that I did love about this show, do you know when the first season aired, Liam?
1997.
It was just so lovely watching something that was filmed in square TV format.
Oh, is that what I was going to say? There was just so many things that, even though we were both alive when it happened, just seems so sort of technologically quaint these days. The corded phones, the huge video camera that Jonathan holds in a couple of scenes.
Yeah.
We've really come a long way, haven't we, in the past almost 20 years?
Yeah, I read an interesting piece about how that only 90s kids will remember this meme is like a way that 90s kids are trying to cope with the fact that there have been so many technological changes in our lifetime.
Okay, and I once read a think piece.
Oh, yes.
About how people give millennials a lot of shit for like being all about their screens and stuff, but it's interesting for the 90s kids because when they were growing up in their very early childhoods, everything was still sort of pre-digital revolution. So they had that sort of classic childhood experience. And then at a certain point, all the tech kicked in and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a fucking wild ride we've had growing up.
It's the future. We have iPhones.
Although I suppose, like, cameras for filming probably are still that big, aren't they? Like professional ones.
I'm not sure, honestly.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so... Exploding visions of sad clown nudes.
Yep. An interviewer walks in front of it with Hedley Shale, the artist, and they explain that it's, you know, art that questions our received ideals of female identification. And they're at the opening of an art show.
This, yeah. We see Francesca.
She's putting on red lipstick and a white dress, and she approaches... Hedley? What kind of name is Hedley?
I know, Hadley is a name. Hedley is not a name.
No. He pours her some sparkling wine, they laugh, and then Serena pushes between them and is not impressed. She says, you're so transparent, I may throw up.
I think she also has to tell him, like, what number nude painting that girl is before he remembers who it is.
Yes, and I think the episode positions us to think that he is just playing dumb, but as we may find out in the denouement, he may have been sincere.
Absolutely.
So then we cut to his painting studio as he's like thumbing some paint over a woman's butt and Serena comes in and says, well, that brings back memories. A lot of sort of low-key sexual banter in this episode.
Yeah, like no one's really trying.
No.
Also, I will say, I don't know if it's because we've watched predominantly American shows so far, I think, but I found the pacing of this show insane.
Yes, I think it basically packed like the... Compared to, like, Castle, it packed about the first two or three episodes worth of, like, start of series, protagonists meet up, character development, just into this first thing. Although it was a double-length episode, to be fair.
But they did also drag other stuff out more. Like, in Castle, Luther, what else have we watched? Pretty much everything. You see the death happen before the opening credits.
True, true. And whereas I'd this say it was probably a good 15, 20 minutes before we met our protagonists as well.
These are the things I noted down. It was 9 minutes before the actual murder and 13 minutes before we meet the titular character.
I appreciate the delay on the murder, though, to a certain degree, because it always felt to me, especially with Castle, that since in the two episodes that we watched, the victims were both dead by the time we met them, they just felt a bit more like a prop and less like the actual tragedy that occurred.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
So anyway,
like other shows, you do meet the you at least see them interact with people.
That's normally like, what, 2 to 3 minutes, would you say?
Yeah, probably.
I don't know, I kind of appreciate it in this. Though I would imagine in future episodes, which are not double episodes, it would be a more traditional sort of time frame for the death.
Yeah, I agree. I just thought like there was some bits that I was really appreciated, the fact it was an 80-minute double episode, but there were other bits where I was like, you could have cut this down.
Yeah. Bulk. We watched the same magic act occur twice.
Although, I think that was necessary to do the, like, red herring.
To be fair, there was a lot of tension in that second one.
Oh,
as
boy.
As we get to. That almost made me tear up my mystery envelope, honestly.
Oh, is that when you did the... when you?
No,
said
no,
you...
that's just aside from that.
Okay. So okay, we're still at the art gallery with the nudes.
No, actually, we're in the studio now. Because he was thumbing
so
the
we
butt,
are.
If you recall. Anyway.
Yep. Thumb in a butt.
Serena goes to work. Hedley picks up the phone and is like, it's me. She just left. Get around here and make me bark like a sea lion.
What the fuck are you into, Hedley?
Is that a thing?
I've never heard it before.
I'm reasonably vanilla. Is that a thing?
I'm also reasonably vanilla, but I have listened to a lot of Savage Love and I can say that's never a phrase I've heard.
What kind of aquatic mammal do you sound like when you have sex? For my money,
none.
I'll take elephant seal.
How different would an elephant seal sound to a grey... what did he say? Grey seal?
Sea lion.
Sea lion. Grey seal is a song by Elton John. That was that was where I went there with my brain.
Something about a candle in the wind.
Yeah.
So she peels out. She sprays gravel all over the weird little dragon statue they have and almost runs over the mailman. And then she gets to work because she's the editor-in-chief at Eve Magazine.
It's never really clarified what it is apart from like a women's magazine, but our... protagonist
I assume it's a dolly, it's a blush, it's a whatever the magazine is called in Just Shoot Me.
Blush?
Oh, okay.
What is that?
I think that might be the magazine in Just Shoot Me, actually.
Oh. Also, speaking of
dolly,
did
you know that
dolly Doctors?
The last issue of Dolly has come out.
Oh, I didn't realise the whole magazine was being discontinued. I thought it was just Dolly Doctor.
I'm pretty sure it's Dolly.
Oh, shit. Because
how will tweens get their advice and or titillation?
But see, you jest, but they actually did a thing and Dolly Doctor gave the best advice, like better than actual women's magazines.
Really?
Yeah. That was an article sent to me by buddy and listener Leah. Thanks, man.
Was that in her list of suggestions for the show?
It was not. This was just in a separate conversation we were having about Dolly Doctor.
Cool, cool. Shout out to our official listener, Leah.
If you'd like to be an official listener, fucking email
rate
us.
Rate and review us on iTunes. Come
on.
We
should probably do a shout out for that. Or has no one done it?
I mean, if we got any in Australia, I would.
Oh, well, I'll check UK iTunes.
So anyway, in what we are led to believe is a significant moment, as Serena is going through her door into her office, her PA gets a call from a model
Davina
who wants her
Yates
pictures back.
Or Davina Bates. We don't know.
So this is... shall we just run through this big red herring now so we don't have to worry about it later?
I think that would be wisest, yes.
So later in the episode, it's purported that Serena murdered her husband and that she had this number, she had her PA's number pre-dialed in her phone so that as she was going to go through her door, her phone would ring and she would look away, letting Serena crawl on the floor behind her couches and fake phone conversation with her PA, so she never actually had to go into her office because she had established that I'm going into my office, don't bother me like all afternoon because I'm busy.
Yeah, so the way that Jonathan dissects this, should we just get into that now?
Yeah, sure. We haven't actually gotten to the actual murder, but let's just discount this whole thing because...
yeah, so when the PA goes in the morning, because the phone call is so urgent, she's like, I'll just pop in before she gets settled. We don't actually see Serena.
We just see a pair of legs and smoke from her cigarette. Presumably in one of those evil Cruella de Vil cigarette holders.
I assumed. Or like a big-time Hollywood producer cigar.
Oh, yes, sure.
So immediately I was, being a seasoned mystery watcher, was like, oh boy, they're probably fake legs in the smoke machine. So what's the woman's name in this show?
Serena?
No, the journalist.
Oh, Maddie.
Maddie. She speaks to Jonathan as the trick designer to be like, it's a locked room mystery. How did she get out? Because the PA was there all day. What he does, or they sort of cheat their way into the office to get the layout. He creates a little diorama and figures out that...
Mostly to scale.
Mostly to scale. That she would have, as Liam said, faked the phone call from her own pocket, spoken to her PA while she was crawling behind the couches, set up a little microphone that linked to her speaker in her room so she could say... fine, bring them in now. And then while the PA was finding the file to put in the office or pick up from the office or something, she would exit without being seen. My problem with this...
Only if the last name of the caller was Yates and not Bates, because the Y cabinet is further enough away from the door to break line of sight.
I've been in the same house as someone I'm making a phone call to on different floors, and you can hear that... there's someone talking near you and also into the phone. There's no way she would have been able to be crouched behind a couch speaking into the phone and not have her PA be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess she could have whispered, because whispered voices really carry well into phones, but then the receptionist would be like, what the fuck's wrong with your voice?
Yeah, it was a weird red herring to throw in.
Yes.
So let's never speak
and
it
Jonathan,
again.
And we see shots of that being reenacted with the puppets Jonathan has also made, and also with the actresses actually reenacting it.
Red Herring Central.
So, yes.
That's a new theme song I'm bringing in, I've just decided.
Sure. That's the red herring sound. Perfect. So Katrina goes into her office. Meanwhile, back at home, the murder happens.
Yeah, so we don't...
We get shots of... a lady he calls, who is revealed to be their housekeeper, coming over to their place, and she has some banter with a man who is their neighbor, who is fixing a car. It's like, he makes you work every day. And she says, if the vacuum breaks, maybe I'll call you over to get underneath it. And it's all very good fun.
Oh, they're having a whale of a time, let me tell you.
She comes in, she lets herself in as he goes upstairs.
Because he's in his studio and hears something knock over.
Yes, the sound of what I thought was breaking glass, but isn't. And we hear him say, what are you doing? Because that's important. I've written down his exact last words. Where are we? Oh, what is this? What do you think you... And there's a blat, blat, as he's shot twice.
Blat, blat, famously the sound that guns make.
Yeah, brah, brah. Have you seen that? You've watched BoJack Horseman season 3, right? That one scene where...
the rap dolphin?
Yes, the rap dolphin, Sextina Aquafina, Diane, and I want to say Princess Carolyn are all in a car with Mr. Peanut Butter making gun noises.
Yeah.
And he's like, can we please stop making gun noises?
Oh, because he's a dog. Oh, yeah. Little puppy.
Oh, Mr. Peanut Butter. Mr. Paul F. Tompkins.
Anyway, we are doing a very bad job this episode of staying on topic.
Yeah, this is a very long episode and we've been very off topic. So, the maid lets herself in, hears the gunshot, she goes upstairs, he's dead, and there's a blonde woman tied up. She's got duct tape over her eyes and mouth, and her hands are behind her back.
So, I mean, obviously she didn't do it because she's been held hostage. Now...
The window's open, she looks outside, but there's no one inside.
Here is where I got suspicious
and then,
of the
gasp.
Model.
Hold on. Gasp, gasp, gasp. A man grabs her shoulder. But it's okay, it's just the guy she passed along the way being like, I heard noises, what's wrong?
She doesn't know they're dead. Well, the girl's not dead. And then the police come in and start their investigation. Now, the point that I got suspicious of this blonde woman is when she said that all this happened after they had made love for 2 hours. Bitch!
Yeah, I think the detective actually described that later.
Who does that? That's a long time. You could have watched a whole movie. I don't believe you.
Well, you know, foreplay is very important.
Yeah, but she doesn't say that. Well, I guess... Yeah, I guess.
We were watching Shaun of the Dead, and then, you know, one thing led to the other. And...
Yeah, exactly.
This was actually pre-Shaun of the Dead, so the alibi wouldn't hold up.
Oh, God, good point. Maybe she's a time traveler.
In court, the lawyer would say, objection! Shaun of the Dead isn't going to come out for another 10 years.
But he is the Doctor, so he could have time-travelled forward, brought back Shaun of the Dead.
He's got access to all sorts of inter-era DVDs.
Well, you'd have to get a DVD player as well. I don't think they were around in 97.
True. But man, can you just imagine the utility of being friends with a time traveler who could get you future movies?
Holy shit, that would be so good.
Right. Anywho, so they find this green bag with jewelry in it in the gardens. They're like, oh, it must have been a robbery gone awry.
Helped by the fact that the drawer has been forced open.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, the locked jewelry drawer had been forced open.
That makes sense. So they go to Serena's office and let her know that the murder occurred, and they check her alibi, and that whole thing that we recounted at length.
Yeah.
Is established, her alibi that she's been in her office all morning, which she has. Spoiler alert.
But they do make it look suspicious as hell that maybe she wasn't.
This was, you said you watched this on Netflix. I watched it on my DVDs. And you said this was technically two episodes on Netflix?
Yep.
Okay, so they spend what I would imagine is more or less the entirety of the first episode painting Katrina as the obvious murderer. Serena.
Yeah, right? Yeah, they do, yeah. Oh my God, what was the point where it cut episodes? Because I was like, you cannot be fucking serious that it stopped here. I'm not going to remember, so carry on.
Okay,
don't
sure.
Don't give me time to think about it.
Would it have been, like, maybe just before the scene with
just
the
model? I'm
going
to go back
the
onto
model?
Netflix and fucking check, because I can just...
And by model, I do mean the diorama and not the actual female model.
Oh, I thought
episode.
You meant the female model. No, I don't think it was that. It was definitely Jonathan saying something. And, like, literally, like, it ended on me being like, okay, so the first episode ends on the Yates-Bates conversation, where Jonathan
okay,
is
so
like, well, it would make a big difference if it's Yates, because that would explain how Serena Shale got out of that room to kill her husband. Ominous music. That's the end.
Right, yes. And that's where it's very strongly painting Serena as the murderer.
Yeah.
And then I guess what is the first scene of the next episode, as we'll get to, sort of walks all that back.
Yeah, then it's like, oh, no, what?
That feels very manipulative as a sort of two-parter.
But I suppose it's like setting it up as like a not being a necessarily a straightforward procedural, right? Although it is. But it's not, because it's a twist, because it's magic.
I guess so, but I don't know. That if this was aired as two different episodes, I'm not sure if it was. That feels very manipulative to me.
No, I agree, but I doubt it was. I think it was probably like a two-part introduction.
Yeah, feature length, as they do, as the Beeb is known to do.
Ah, the Beeb. You and your classic manipulative technique.
I just assume all TV from the UK is by the Beeb.
Yeah, me too, to be fair. Someone was talking about Lip Sync Battle UK, which apparently has had a whole season, being on Channel 5, and I was like, what the fuck even is? I didn't know Channel 5 was a channel.
Not one I've heard of. While we're on this little diversion, I want to point out that this show has an amazing theme song.
Yes, okay. It made me feel like I was coming home to a warm cup of tea, like, with nostalgia. And then I was like, did I do a ballet dance to this, or is it...
It's Dance Macabre by Camille Saint-Saëns. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. I'm almost certainly getting it wrong.
Okay, I don't know.
And it's just a little piece about, you know, death and that.
It goes
rigmarole.
Like this. Bam, 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 bam. You know the one. Everyone knows the one. Everyone's
marvelous.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It's atmospheric. It really gets you into the murdery mood.
Absolutely.
So, where are we?
Okay, so...
They've been to her office to inform her there's been a murder.
Yep.
Long story short, they find this guy who had... Oh, no, hang on. There's a brief diversion where we see Jonathan in the supermarket.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. So to establish, this is the establishment we get of Jonathan Creek. You don't know anything about him. He's watching the person in front of him.
He's never been in QI before. You don't know who Alan Davies is.
This is the first episode, so you don't even know the premise. And he's watching the person in front of him's groceries get scanned, and the teller is like, it's 4360. And he's like, oh, no, I think it's
4392.
And he's like, no, no, I think it's...
4367.
And then the woman in front... They have an argument, and the woman whose grocery it is like, oh, well, maybe we better check then. It's 30p, ma'am! 30p! You can...
Close out at 20, actually.
Okay.
25, actually, so...
Yeah, like...
Still a difference. You know, different amounts of money mean different things to different people.
Also, to be fair, I would also be like, I think we better check, actually, because that lady at the... scanner was being a dick.
So then we smash cut to the supermarket manager being ringing it all up on a Casio calculator. It's like, oh, he was right. I'm afraid we're going to have to close this checkout. Sorry, everyone. And everyone behind him gets very angry. But would you want your groceries to be rung up on a defective checkout? Like, it was only 25p this time, but it could have been 25P next time.
So that's where we're at.
So he bought sandwiches and Barbies, and we cut to him sawing up Barbies in a vice. It's going great. He's eating his white bread
sandwiches,
and nothing else sandwich.
Oh, fuck, I could go a cheese sandwich right now.
Don't let me stop you. Actually, do, because eating on mic is gross.
Yeah, no, it is gross. And also, I don't have cheese or bread, so.
That's the two essential elements of a cheese sandwich.
Well, I'm going to have a halloumi burger, which is basically the fancier version of a cheese sandwich, to be fair.
That's the meat of cheeses.
Yeah, so who the fuck is this guy who is looking at diagrams, sawing up a Barbie and counting other people's shopping expenses?
Well, there's quite a fun cut here where he puts the Barbie into a little contraption, and the contraption has the exterior of like a Queen of Hearts or something like that. And we cut from him doing that to the trick being performed on stage, where a woman is placed in the contraption, and because of whatever switch they do, a burning stick is shoved through the hole in the middle of the contraption. So it looks like it's being pushed straight through her torso. But of course she's fine. How does that happen? Magic, I guess. Because we're on stage now at Adam Klaus's magic show.
Woo, magic.
And this scene basically just serves to introduce us to him as a magic guy. And there's a bit where he gets roughed up by, I guess, there's the security or burly guys who also perform with Adam.
Yeah. Sorry, I got distracted because I was going to be like, I'm really into the whole like Queen of Hearts aesthetic. I really like that. And I was trying to think of what other Queen of Hearts stuff I had that was making me think so fondly about it. And it's the leggings I'm wearing right now.
Hey.
And then because I just looked down and was like, oh, that's what it is. Also, one of the desserts I had at the Fat Duck. Thanks, Heston Blumenthal, for your Queen of Hearts shortbread jam biscuit thing.
That sounds kind of contrived.
What, the biscuit?
The theme of that dessert.
Yeah. It was really delicious, though. It was like the Queen of Hearts card was printed on white chocolate, and then it was sort of like a jammy dodger.
Okay, that works.
Oh, it was so good.
So there's a really dumb bit that happens where the detectives who are investigating this case and then disappear after like the first 15 minutes of the episode go into the cinema, and there's this guy in there, Stephen Grismal, and they walk past like a dozen people to get to his seat.
Oh my God, I love this bit so much.
They hold out a big cue card saying, Stephen Grismal, ? And then he says, yep. And they pull out another cue card that says, you're nicked. And then we cut to him.
What if he said no?
Then I guess they would have just left.
They didn't have a cue card that said, sorry for disturbing you.
Which they would just hold up in front of the screen at the front of the cinema.
Imagine if that's how love actually happened instead of that guy being creepy.
Honestly, I've only seen that movie once.
It's Carolers. Hey, Keira Knightley. You're nicked.
I'm a detective. I've been investigating you all along.
Yeah. Okay, that's someone.
You
make
killed
that happen,
Hedley Shale in his art studio / bedroom.
It was Keira Knightley in the art studio / bedroom with
the
gun.
Revolver.
That's why no one can find the fingerprints.
We'll get to that.
Because she went back to the future.
So let's cut the bullshit, shall we?
Yeah, listen, let's just get through what happened in this episode.
This is going to be a long episode. Let's just make our peace with that.
I mean, it was a long show. We have a lot to cover.
So, he exercises his right to have an investigative journalist look into his case, which is apparently a thing.
Yeah, that was weird.
I don't think that's a right.
But also, if you requested that, surely they'd be like, no.
No? So,
that is literally our job to look into.
We get our brief introduction to Maddie, where she's like drawing a doodle on the cover of her book, which is not selling well, 1,000 Book Returns in Australia.
I would like to clarify, she's not drawing a penis. She's drawing new hair over herself, just because you said she's drawing
a
doodle.
She's scribbling on it.
Yeah.
She has a sort of on-again, off-again relationship with her cameraman. Also, this happens in this scene, and there's a lot of this in this episode, where a woman is sitting down, and a man who is, you know, in an affectionate relationship with her will come over to her, stick his hand down her top, and then start kissing her.
Yeah, don't do that.
That's fucked up.
That's not a good move.
No. And it happens like three times in this episode, and it really weirded me out by how consistent it was.
Was that like a thing in 1997?
We're just too vanilla.
Obviously.
So she gets the call. She's like, okay, I'll look into this. And then
she meets with this dude.
Yeah. And she's like, sure, I'll do it. And then I think in the next scene, she's hacking Francesca's, the model Francesca, who was tied up in the bedroom, her answering machine, because it's got a 2-digit code and that's only 99 possibilities. And it was number 36.
So that's, I guess, good. She didn't waste a lot of time.
This was pre the day of, like, get it wrong 3 times and you get locked out of your phone.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
There's a lot of, like, future shock in this episode, basically.
I hadn't even thought of that.
So she learns that that night, Francesca is going to see Adam Clowes at the Prince of Wales Theatre.
Oh, shit. That's a real theatre.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Cool.
I think I went there. What's on there?
We see the Iron Maiden routine where there's, like, an Egyptian theme. And he whips at her a few times. He whips at his assistant. Adam
whips at his
assistant.
That's where Book of Mormon is.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
I guess he's a big name. Adam whips at his assistant a few times, and then he hypnotizes her. And his male assistants wrap her up in mummy wrap, and they put her in Iron Maiden. But then he puts on an Anubis headpiece, and the Iron Maiden skewers her, and then it opens. But it turns out she's fine. She hasn't been skewered. And then also she undoes the headpiece and it's not her, it's Adam. What magic? And then meanwhile, Maddie is also there in the top boxes using her opera binoculars to scope out Francesca in the crowd.
But you know who else is scoping out Francesca in the crowd?
During intermission, Adam. So he's like, stage manager, can we use her in the trick in the next act? And she's like, yeah, all right.
And so they do. And this is where we see Jonathan.
Oh yeah, there's a bit in the interval where Maddie gives her number, pretends to be a grief counsellor and gives Francesca a number. And B, Jonathan accidentally skewers Maddie's hand with a toothpick.
Yeah, I didn't really see, I was watching this bit, but I wasn't really taking it in. And it just looks like she's making, bedroom eyes at him constantly. Which brings me to two questions for you,
I think,
Lee.
Other than this scene, where I think it was a factor of you not really paying attention, but in the rest of the episode, your question?
Well, I have 2 questions for you, Liam. Question one, will they? And question two, won't they?
I'm pretty sure they won't, although the end of the episode leaves it very ambiguous.
It does, doesn't it? The end of the episode, they're just in his hotel room making...
We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Oh, well, we might not listen.
It's one of those sort of days. She leaves and then she knocks on the door and that's the end of the episode. Maybe they do and then they won't ever again.
Maybe. Anyway.
But that's a story for, I don't know, 15 minutes from now.
Exactly.
So he gets her out of the audience and uses her in a trick in which he puts her in a shower and it looks like she's stripping behind the shower curtain. But actually she's fallen down a chute and Jonathan has to lead her back to the front entrance of the theatre. And she's like, so you create all these fantastic illusions for Adam Clowes? And he's like, when I open this door, just step through and take a bow. Because he's not good at talking to women. Because... Adam likes it when he's not getting laid, which is often because that makes his mind more analytical and better at coming up with tricks.
Which is weird, but all right.
So, yeah, they really do push Jonathan as the sort of socially maladjusted, windmill-dwelling, eccentric recluse in this episode. And I think in future seasons that sort of gets downplayed a tiny bit, so he's just sort of a bit shy.
Yeah, I don't remember it being that he was weird necessarily. I just think it was he... knew all this magic-y stuff and he happened to live in a windmill, but that was sort of neither here nor there.
The dynamic, though, is definitely that he is sort of the magic-slash-mystery genius and the women, Maddie in this season's case, are sort of interpersonal to the point of being con people.
Yeah, that's true.
It's taking the Holmes-Watson dynamic to its logical extreme.
Is the logical extreme magic?
Well, just that... Watson is much better with people than Holmes is.
Right.
And, you know, the female, I guess, sidekicks you would call them in this show are typically very manipulative of people when they need to get information for mystery solving.
But also not manipulative in a way where they're using their feminine wiles, at least in this episode, which I enjoyed. Like, it was just legit, lying your way into meetings and stuff, not like, oh, look at my titties. I'm bending over on your desk in this top and squishing my boobs.
Tell me where
together.
The murder weapon is.
Can you imagine it was that easy?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be a great show.
And I would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for you meddling magicians and your damn tits. Anywho,
what the fuck is happening?
There's a scene where Maddie pretends to grief counsel Fran and gets her to sort of go over the mourning, and she talks about how the perpetrator had a gloved hand, so how do you know it's a woman? Maybe it was his wife. And then Jonathan knocks on the door because Adam made him go deliver a dress to her. They leave and they go get lunch.
This is where we also see Jonathan as like a weird, awkward person because he's like, do you want to have sex with me or is this literally just lunch? And she's like, nah, I'm good. Just lunch. And he's like, okay, I don't really get subtext, so I thought I'd ask.
Subtext with women, he specifically says.
I mean, you would think subtext is a pretty universal either yes or no, but
apparently not.
Apparently women's subtext, those tricky females
at the supermarket seem pretty into
subtext.
Him.
Well, listen, I'm going to be into anyone who can save me 25p on my Tesco shop. Like the cashier last night who I was like, oh, I have to buy an advent calendar.
You had to buy an advent calendar.
I didn't have to. I wanted to buy one for Patrick because he likes them and I don't. And I was like, oh, I'll do something nice.
Important question. Chocolates in the doors or not?
Obviously.
Okay.
But I was like, oh, shit, where are they? Do you mind if I just run and get one while you scan my groceries? And he was like, oh, do you want this one? And pulled out a reduced one from under his desk. I was like, you can still have a look if you want, but this one's only £1.40. And I was like, sir, I'll take it. Thank you for saving me a walk and 60p.
Nice.
So I know that story's safe because Patrick doesn't listen to the podcast like a traitor.
Dead to me.
Absolutely. How do you think I feel? Anyway, this is not about saving money on your shop. And yet
this is a new segment.
It's not. I'm joking. Yeah, a new segment. Couponing with Reggie and Liam.
Just put in a little theme.
Catchy,
put in a little theme song here.
It's time to get some groceries.
I meant in post, but that's fine.
Okay. Thank God, because I could not think of a rhyme for groceries except peas.
That was great.
Anyway.
Okay, they have lunch. He does a magic trick where he get. Okay, we should talk about this magic trick because it's important for just like this whole mystique of the show, I guess. So he's like, okay, here's this tissue. Think of a well-known city. And she says Constantinople. And then he balls it up and puts it in his fist. And he says, put your hand on mine. And she does. And so her hand is on his.
Also, when she says Constantinople, she thinks she's being tricksy because no one else would say that, so he wouldn't already have a Constantinople tissue in his pocket.
Mm.
She has that sort of smug look about her, like, you thought I was going to say Paris, didn't
or
you,
Or London,
bitch?
The city we're probably in.
They are definitely in because that's where the Prince of Wales Theatre is and also
local knowledge.
Victoria Station. Yeah.
So they make eye contact for a bit, then he lifts up his hand and he smacks it twice and opens it and the tissue's gone. What? It's also under the condiment stand and Constantinople is written on it. How did he do it?
What the fuck?
Magic, I guess. He's some sort of Harry Potter boy wizard.
But she's very insistent on knowing how this magical trick
was
done.
So what he did was, he set it up because he knows people always ask him to do magic tricks when they learn that he designs magic tricks. So when he dropped his fork on the floor out of shot earlier, he grabbed a tissue out of her bag and put it in his pocket. Then when she went to the toilet, also before the scene started, he gave it to the waiter and asked him to write down whatever city she said. And there's a shot of the waiter looking so happy to be involved.
I love that.
And then when he brings her the tray, stick it under it and bring it to the and put it on the table. And then he threw away the first tissue that she gave him so she wouldn't see it. And she looks around and she sees it on the floor.
And she's a bit disappointed that it wasn't magic.
She says, that is mind-numbingly banal. And he says, thank you.
Because aren't they all when you learn how to do magic
That's the thing about magic, apparently. People want it to be actually magic, but they also want to know the secret and then the surprise when it's not actually magic.
Idiots.
These rubes with their secrets of the magicians.
So now they've become a little crime-fighting duo.
One moment. Okay. If Jonathan Creek were real, and
yeah.
he was a guy who solved mysteries and also devised tricks for magicians, he would definitely have some sort of, like, Penn and Teller Fool Us reality show, wouldn't he?
Oh, straight
Unless he just
up.
Refused because he's an eccentric who lives in a windmill. But
yeah, it would depend on whether it's pilot Jonathan Creek or future season Jonathan Creek.
But also, one of the future lady sidekicks is a TV presenter, so I feel like she could badger him into that.
Oh, definitely, especially if they are... rather than not. You know what I mean?
Sorry, that took me a minute. But yes, if they are doing it, which they, I'm pretty sure they are not.
Well, good.
He actually, in the most recent season, has a wife who I think he meets off screen, which is, what's her name? Sarah Alexander, who you may know as the wife in Worst Week of My Life.
Oh, she, the one from Coupling.
Yes.
That was weird that I actually recognised her name before you said the one from The Worst Week of My Life. I was like, I'm pretty sure she's in Coupling. That's so weird.
Yeah, it's an unusual dynamic in that season. There's a 2016 Christmas special coming? What?
Yes, nice. Get pumped.
Just in time for us to do a fourth episode in a row of this on it. No, because we have to...
Hooray!
We need to stay chronological.
But do we if it's a Christmas special?
No. So they team up. They're a crime-fighting duo, as you said.
Yep.
They decide... Jonathan says, if I'm going to solve this mystery about how she left the office, I need to have a good idea of her office layout. Can you lie us in there? And she's like, sure.
How she lies in there, it's just like, we have an appointment. We're filming a thing. It should be all set up. Bye.
And they go in there and basically she gets a Photoshop tutorial from the 1990s while Jonathan just spins in a circle and films the office layout. And then this is all to do with a red herring, so let's skim over it.
Yeah, basically that's what happens. And then he goes home and makes the diorama.
And he's like, well, if her name was Davina Yates, then I know how she murdered her husband. But no. But
alas, it wasn't, so who fucking cares?
He builds that diorama and he's like... So she could have done that thing with the fake phone call and the bug to speak through her intercom. But, I mean, she wouldn't have actually done that. It doesn't stand up for a minute to real-life examination because there might have been a fire drill or an urgent call that had to be put through and it just wouldn't have worked.
Yeah. So they abandon it, basically.
And then there's a scene where they are... Maddie is lying on some sort of magician prop, which makes it look like she's floating in midair. And
while they discuss the intricacies of the case.
Yes, and about how there are unidentified prints on the gun.
That apparently don't belong to anyone who was at the crime scene and in the house that day.
Or the guy they have in custody. And also, according to Francesca, the guy was wearing gloves. So what's going on there?
What is going on there?
So they go to the house where the murder happened and con their way in via the housekeeper, Katrina Topless.
It's such a bad name.
I know. As they open the door, there's like a gust of wind, and apparently they just have an open display case where they keep the 50-year-old pen and ink doodle by drawn by Salvador Dali, because it blows onto the floor.
Yeah, so that was weird.
Like, get a glass display case for your priceless artworks, guys, even if they are sort of ad hoc.
Then there's a whole weird scene where Maddie goes upstairs to get a look at the stuff.
The long and short of it is she finds a bloodstain on the floor and also a rubber band.
Meanwhile, Jonathan is comforting the housekeeper who has found a letter from HMRC addressed to Mr.
Sorry, what is HMRC?
Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs. It's like the tax office.
Thank you very much. I knew that from the episode, but the listener might not have.
Ah, yes. Apologies. Sorry, I live in England now, so I know all of the things. Acronyms for tax. So she's having a cry because then she remembers finding the dead body because it's addressed to him.
She blows her nose on another napkin drawing by someone else.
Picasso.
Yeah, that's right.
Oops.
Whoops. And then Jonathan's comforting her because she's crying because she saw a man dead. And then
her husband comes.
Yeah, he sees her through the window and she goes and lets him in. And then, oh, he gets very jealous. I better let him in. So he starts vacuuming Jonathan's face.
Yeah, this had no relevance to the story at all.
No, just a scene of Jonathan being threatened by a burly man.
So, all right, thanks for that.
Great. And then Maddie comes downstairs and is like, oh, my office gave us the wrong date for the home interview with Miss Shale. Bye. They all leave.
And then they sit in the car and talk about what they found.
Yep. And then as they're talking, Jonathan's like, oh no, I have to be somewhere. And we cut to him at a candlelit dinner with Adam and Francesca because they are both doing it. And also Adam wants Francesca to be his new assistant. Francesca being the model, Adam being the magician, for those of you playing at home.
Yeah, so that means Jonathan's like,
why am I also here? I guess because it's like a be my assistant thing as a disguise for a date.
Yeah. So someone's filming that performance and that's why Jonathan's a bit skeptical.
He's like, maybe stick with the old assistant. And Adam's like, no, she's dead to me now.
So I guess I have to do the show with the new assistant.
Yeah, so they flirt for a bit and they talk about how the victim, Hedley Shale, had this nude painting of her that she has downstairs. So like, let's go see it. And she's like, no, you don't want to see it. The lighting's terrible. And they go down and see it, and it's full of bullet holes. What?
What the fuck?
That sounds dangerous.
Yeah. How did you not hear someone shooting a painting in your own apartment?
I mean, she could have been out.
Yeah, it's true.
How often do you go down into your basement?
If only I had one.
Precisely.
You make a very compelling argument.
Okay, skipping ahead. There's a whole thing where Maddie calls Jonathan and is like, Jonathan, I figured out a heap of shit. Let's talk about it. And Jonathan's like, you didn't tell me that you were seeing your cameraman. And she's like, you think I led you on? And he says, no, you made it very clear you weren't interested in me in a way that implied that you were interested in me. Also,
no, she didn't, you dickhead.
No, just being a dick. Also, before she called, he was watching a TV show on his couch that seemed to consist entirely of canned laughter.
And then, after she calls, he says, like, thanks for nothing, Mr. Bean. And I was like, you weren't watching Mr. Bean.
Also, halfway through their phone call argument, she makes a dramatic motion with her corded telephone on the bed and rips it out of the wall. So there's just, like, no resolution to that conversation for either of them.
No, not at all.
And she only realizes at the end of her big rant, which we see.
Yeah, not much more to say about that.
The next day and the last day of the case, thankfully. Everyone is going to see Adam's big show with the TV things. Francesca's going to be there because she's in it as the assistant. And Serena is going to be there because she wants to talk with Francesca afterwards to buy her story about being the victim's secret lover / her husband's secret lover. And is prepared to make a very generous offer to buy the story. And they can meet for a drink after the show.
But also, she has Maddie's book on her desk. So she's figured out that they lied about what they were doing to get into her office.
Yes. Before the show, Jonathan and Maddie meet up and they're like, we've solved the case. Let's get ready for a big evidence confrontation.
Let's set up the evidence chamber, all good and ready, friends.
We watch the Iron Maiden trick again. And this time, when ostensibly Francesca goes into the Iron Maiden and the spikes come out the back, we see blood trickle down the exterior. What? Has it been rigged so that she's going to get murdered by the murderer now too?
I was because fucking tense in this scene.
Adam was very worried that because all those bullet holes were in her painting, she was going to get murdered too.
But the trick ends and it was just for glitz and glam.
Yeah, it's all good. Everyone's sort of having a great time after the show. Serena and Francesca are cheersing to the money they're both going to make over selling her story. And also being a magician's assistant, I guess. Does that pay very well?
Probably not.
So, they're cheersing. Then Jonathan Creek and Maddie Magellan come in and are like, we've solved the case.
And they have. Yes. Good on them.
So, when they introduce themselves, I really liked this line from Serena where she's like, oh, we've already met. They lied their way into my office the other day. A pity. We could have done with some TV exposure. Still, 10 out of 10 for technique. You can come and work with me any day.
Over my dead body, says Maddie Magellan, yeah. Feminist.
But I liked how sort of mercenary Serena was about all of that. Like, okay, you know, I'm a journalist. I get it. You lie to people.
Yeah.
So, let's discuss what actually happened in this case.
Yes, let's.
She said.
Forgetting what happened in the case.
So, as you know, Francesca arrived at about 9:10 and they made love for 2 hours.
And yet, what time does the postman come to their house?
8 o'clock, but there was a boot print on the letter from the revenue service or whatever it's called.
And if she'd got there at 9:10, he would have opened the door to let her in.
And seen the important
and he would have picked
letter
it up
from the tax man and picked it up.
Because you do. You, yeah. You know, want to know what the tax man's up to.
But then when the maid arrived at 11-ish, she came in the door and stepped on it. So what's going on there?
What indeed?
What that
guess
means?
Guess she didn't come in through the front door.
Yeah, which means Hedley Shale never went to the front door that morning, which means that Francesca killed him.
But, like, how? Because her fingerprints were eliminated from the thing because they didn't match the gun prints.
But they never eliminated her toe prints.
What the fuck are you saying?
Oh, they also found another rubber band in her basement.
Oh, yeah, that's also important.
And, like, in a mystery show, that's a much more of a smoking gun than it would have been in real life, right? Because a rubber band is quite an innocuous object to have, like, have anywhere.
Yeah.
So, what she did was... Oh, the booty call he made that morning was actually to Katrina, the maid. He was sleeping with her because her name's Katrina Topless, so of course she's sleeping with someone.
Of course. I don't know why we didn't pick it up straight from the start.
And there was a scene where Maddie went to the art gallery and she was also there staring at her own nude, which was hung up prominently in the collection. She was like, oh, I didn't realise you were also sleeping with him.
Like, if you're an artist and you're only painting pictures of people you're sleeping with, that seems a bit obvious for your wife.
So, Francesca goes in through the window. She ties herself up. Well, first she blindfolds herself with duct tape, puts duct tape
over
her
before mouth. This, she forces the jewellery drawer open.
Oh, that's right.
Puts all the jewellery in a bag, throws it out the window to make it look like there was a robbery.
Yes. Then she duct tapes over her eyes with a piece of tape with pinpricks over the eyes so that she can still see enough.
Because no one's going to check that once they rip the duct tape off her face.
No. So then she duct tapes her mouth, duct tapes her hands behind her back, and takes off her shoes, sits down in the corner, and knocks over the priceless Ming vase they have on a precarious stand in the corner of the room.
Because when you've got money to fix your Ming vase.
Yeah, you've got money, you've got breakable vase money. She smashes over the vase so that it makes a noise and lures Henry Headley to the bedroom. He comes in. She has used the rubber band to hold a revolver to her foot and pulls the trigger with her big toe on the other foot.
What the fuck?
That seems like quite an achievement, but she's had plenty of time to practice with the painting in her basement that she didn't want them to see.
Well, that explains all the bullet holes.
Mm. And then, so this bit, okay. Maddie says something like, I had Jonathan pop down to the CID to eliminate your toe prints from the inquiries. Unfortunately, then the detective enters. So I guess they just had had her toe prints on file down at the police station.
That's a good point.
Like what?
Yeah. No. What happened was they took her scale down.
Oh,
because
right.
She kept weighing herself.
Yes.
So they'd stolen her scale, taken it down because that had her toe prints on it, and then they matched those toe prints to the ones on the gun.
Oh, good get. I thought the scale going missing, which was a thing like a scene ago, was just because there was a bit earlier where she screamed and everyone ran into her room and she was panicking because she'd put on weight before the performance.
I mean, it kind of was, but it also served to show that she'd been standing on a scale.
Yes,
therefore.
No, that's good. That's well-justified writing, I think.
I agree.
What seemed to just be like an innocuous like bit of Adam Klaus humour was actually integral to the case.
Yeah, who would have thunk?
Jonathan Creek, that's who.
Exactly.
So as they're taking her away, she's like, hey, Serena, you still want my story? It's going to cost you double. And also, Serena's like, huh, you didn't mean anything to him, so you're trash. And also, what? I can't believe he was sleeping with the housekeeper.
Yeah. Now, listen, Francesca, I think where you went wrong with demanding double for the story is that Serena is not now going to pay you to tell your story about how you murdered her husband.
I mean, counterpoint, isn't she?
I don't think she needs new readers that badly.
She's very mercenary, though.
That's true.
And who's she going to pay to write it, huh? Maybe Maddie Magellan. Magellan.
I hope so, but I doubt it.
No, that's probably not going to happen. Anyway, all's well that ends well. A man died.
But we caught him, so that's good.
Yeah. Then we enter the debrief portion of the episode, which is thankfully brief.
Debrief, huh?
Jonathan explains how the revelation that let him solve the case was when, after his angry phone call with Maddie, he turned off the TV by pressing the power button on his remote with his foot.
And because he could not stop thinking about Francesca's weird prehensile toes.
Was that a thing that was brought up earlier?
No, but he definitely says the phrase prehensile toes.
Yeah, I have that written down too.
In the denouement.
I mean, I guess it implies that she had long prehensile toes and she could fire a gun accurately with them.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're in. There's a bit where she's like, take you back to your hotel room. And he says, no, I'll get a cab. And they cut and they're both back in his hotel room.
And he's like, it cuts to them in the cab. Or in her car. And he's like, do you want to come in for a coffee? She's like, nah, it's late. Smash.
I don't think my DVD had that scene.
It wasn't a scene. It was like a second.
Okay.
It was literally like, outside. No, I'll get a cab. Inside the cab. Do you want some coffee? No. Inside the hotel.
Okay. They talk about the prehensile toes. She rolls over on the bed. There's like a surprising amount of sexual tension for a moment.
Yeah, this is where I was like,
yeah, so will they, won't they? They won't. I doubt it. Unless they do between this and next episode, but I don't think they will again.
Well, you never know your luck in the big city.
Like London. End of episode.
We did it!
Yay!
Hooray!
The killer will not strike again until next week.
Well, that brings us to the big question. How are you feeling about this case?
Well, actually, we need to do our mystery envelope segment first.
We do.
Let me just reach into the into the case file and pull out my answer. Do you have one?
I do, yeah.
Okay. I have 37 minutes. Francesca did it because she secretly hated him and then tied herself up.
Fuck off!
So I got the tying up in the wrong order, but...
Fuck off!
What?
How did you get that?
I just had a vibe about her, you know? I felt like they were building up Serena as too strong a thing, and I didn't think it was going to be the maid at that point, so...
Mine was 25 minutes into part two, that it was the magician because he wanted Francesca for himself.
He's a recurring character and he hadn't met Francesca by that point.
But I didn't know that.
Fair enough.
I didn't know he was a recurring character.
I guess that's no worse than my now elementary episode guessing that the recurring police chief was the murderer.
Well, yeah.
All's well that ends well.
Exactly.
So, now that brings us to the next segment of our show. Is this a cold case, or do we want to explore Jonathan Creek further?
I would love to explore Jonathan Creek further. Which sounds like I want to bang him, but that's not what I meant.
Barring any sudden dips in quality, I'm willing to ride this out to our 4-week maximum.
Well, I mean, that's what we thought about Luther, and then we gave up.
True,
so,
true.
You know, yeah,
this actually has mysteries for us, unlike Luther.
That's true, and also, like, how the fuck did you get that Mr. Envelope? I'm so mad.
I can't deny that maybe having seen it again years ago had some sort of subconscious influence on me, but...
Maybe.
Maybe I'm just really good at solving mysteries.
Maybe you are just really good.
All right, I had a vague mystery of the week idea in mind, but we're running long already, so let's do that next time.
Absolutely, let's do it next time, because I enjoy solving me a good mystery. Our theme music is In the Crowd by The Years. Our Twitter is at MysteryTwinsDA. Our email is
mtdetectiveagency@gmail.com. Email us mysteries, email us feedback, email us suggestions for shows. We'll take basically anything.
Just email us to be like, what's up?
Just email us to be like, I have exciting opportunity for you. Send me bank details.
Yeah. Or, you know, I have exciting opportunity for you. Pay me to do your podcast for you. What?
Signed, Mark Maron.
That would be fine. I meant, like, it was some weird unsolicited email from a company in America, right, that was like, do you want to just not be in, worry about
we
creating
do get
content
some of
for your
those,
podcast?
Don't
we do.
Yeah, that's weird.
We've made it. We're on the spammers
list. How do they know
we're
a podcast?
They must troll through the iTunes descriptions and just pull out email addresses.
Anywho.
Mystery solved. Mystery of the week done.
Case closed.
We will catch y'all next week. And until then, no yachts, junior detectives.
Hustle always wins. We're not really twins.